any bookworm might tell you that the book is always better than the movie. How could a film ever capture all the nuance and detail you get on the page? Well, our next guest, who reads and writes about books for a living, says that some movies just outshine the books that they're based on. We're talking about movies and TV shows adapted from books, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you like to read the book first before you see its film or TV version, or do you go back and read a book after you've seen it as a movie or TV show? And what are some of your favorite movies and TV shows based on books? Are there ones you wish would be turned into a movie? Are there ones you've regretted the movie version of? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Olivia Rutigliano is the associate editor of the Crime Reads section and senior film writer at Lit Hub. She's also a PhD candidate in entertainment history at Columbia University. Olivia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. There's a lot of challenges that go from taking a book, especially a beloved book, and turning it into a movie. What are some of the pitfalls that a really good adaptation can avoid?
This is a great question. I think we've been struggling to answer that for many decades. I think the first thing is to weigh the question of narrative fidelity. How important is it to include every minute detail, or is it more important to derive elements from the essence of the work on the whole and transform it into something new? I think a good adaptation often walks the balance between the two while understanding that a new medium like film or TV is not going to be able to do everything that the original book or source material does and work within those boundaries.
In a recent feature at Lit Hub, you shared some of your personal favorites. I want to give a listen to one. I mean, a lot of people think of this as one of the best movies of all time. Here's a taste.
Now you come to me and you say, Don Corleone, give me justice. But you don't ask with respect. You don't offer friendship. You don't even think to call me Godfather. Instead, you come into my house on the day my daughter's to be married and you ask me to do murder.
All right. Great movie. And you say a much, much better movie than the book. How so?
Well, I think The Godfather, the book, which is written by Mario Puzo in 1969, it's a great book. It introduces us to the Corleone family, and we will always be grateful to Puzo for doing that. But I think the screenplay of The Godfather actually provides an edit of the book that gets us a more economical and very charged version. And Mario Puzo co-wrote the screenplay, which he based off the book, but he co-wrote it with Coppola, who had his own thoughts about how to mold it into a movie. And the two of them edited the original source text together. And that's why I think it works well. It has the true essence of the book through the author's involvement, but it also has a sense of where to cut and where not to cut from an outsider's perspective.
Now, I got to admit, I've never directly read the book, but I double-checked the story with my mom. She was reading The Godfather when she went into labor with me.
Oh my God.
So I figure I must, I like cannolis, but I think that's all I've taken away from it. So is it, if I like the movie, do you think it's worth it for me to go back and actually read the book myself?
This is a good question. I mean, I always think it's worth to read the book, if only because it enriches the experience of watching the movie to know what was included and what wasn't. I have a similar thoughts about Jaws, which I think is a much better movie than it is a book. I apologize to Peter Benchley. but I always think that reading the book can't do you wrong.
All right, here's a little listen to Jaws, because that was another one you talked about in your piece.
Yes.
Shark! The shark!
Michael's in the pond.
All right, a little taste of the ominous music there. Now, if I'm not mistaken, once again, the author, Peter Benchley, was involved in writing the screenplay?
Yes, he was. Peter Benchley co-wrote the screenplay for Jaws with Carl Gottlieb. And I mean, the thing about the book Jaws is that it tries to do so much, and I don't necessarily think it pulls off everything. But the movie was whittled down to a really fantastic three-act structure. There's clear character development, and a lot of the murky stuff that the characters deal with or are imbued in those characters in the book go away. Like, In the book, Matt Hooper has an affair. Matt Hooper's the character played by Richard Dreyfuss. He has an affair with Chief Brody's wife, and he's actually not a great guy. And I won't tell you what happens to him at the end, but I mean, he is governed by hubris so much. And paring that down and having him be Richard Dreyfuss's sort of nerdy scientist who's able to advocate for the shark without getting in the way of Chief Brody's personal life and impeding Brody's own arc is, I think, a very smart way to trim that character down.
We're talking about book-to-movie adaptations or book-to-TV. Olivia Rutigliano is with us. She's written about this and many other topics. You can find her work at Lit Hub, and she's a PhD candidate in entertainment history at Columbia University. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite book-to-movie or TV show adaptation where they think they got it right, maybe even better than the book? Or was there one that you were excited about and it let you down? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Olivia, here's one you recently wrote about, a long-awaited adaptation of a Judy Blume book, the classic Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. A half-century wait for it to be turned into a movie. What was it worth it? Was it worth the wait?
Oh, it was. It was wonderful. I just saw it a few days ago, so I'm really able to talk about it. It's fresh in my mind. Yes, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret was written in 1970. It's about a young girl, an 11-year-old, who moves from New York City to New Jersey, and in her new school has a new group of friends who are very worried about growing up or if they're growing up enough. And a lot of the book is about Margaret's own experiences, understanding herself, understanding her body's changes, but also her relationship to her parents and religion and God, and most dramatically. And these are very, very weighty themes, especially for a book that's aimed at preteens. And so Judy Blume did not sell the rights for 49 years until she found the right people she felt would adapt it with respect and make a progressive, thoughtful adaptation out of it. And she found the right people in Kelly Fremon Craig and James L. Brooks, who made the new movie. And it manages to keep the reverent, respectful, but also funny, curious tone of the book without sacrificing any of the important themes or the really useful work that it does in representing girlhood and all of the things that go along with it.
Okay, now, I mean, I grew up reading Judy Blume. This is a cherished memory, those books, for a lot of kids. Were you nervous about a movie having a go at this one, even with the Judy Blume seal of approval on it?
Oh, I was so nervous. My gosh. Every time a childhood adaptation gets turned into something, I freak out. I was also nervous about last year's Catherine Called Birdie, which is actually a very similar book, very similar movie. It's also about a preteen girl coming to terms with things, especially about her own status and her body, et cetera. But that takes place in the Middle Ages, and Lena Dunham adapted that one. Just like when I showed up to the movie theater to see Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. I was almost shivering. I was so nervous. But this one turned out to be really wonderful. And one of the ways that it was wonderful was that it wisely understood that not only children were going to watch this movie, the book might have its main audience in 11-year-olds, but the movie is going to be seen by a lot of people, including their parents, who take them to it, or older siblings, younger siblings. So this one actually had wide multi-generational appeal, and it cultivated that by expanding the plot to include a lot of detail about Margaret's mom, who is played by Rachel McAdams. So the two actually become parallel figures in this movie, and it's a really nice way to modernize it and update it, but also cater to an audience who might be moms, preteens, somewhere in between or elsewhere on the spectrum.
We have many callers. Let's bring on Don in Union Center. Don, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just I think in general, a lot of the time the book is better than the movie. But and one quick example is I'm originally from Trenton, New Jersey, and I really got a laugh out of the Janet Ivanovich Stephanie Plum books. And I never saw the movie, but I heard that was a dog. But as far as movies better than books, I've always liked Dr. Zhivago, and then I read the book, and I thought the book was way too much stuff. The movie was a lot more streamlined, a lot more focused. Just the book was real complicated, if you want to say. So anyway, that's just the biggest example in my mind. Dr. Zhivago, I thought, was a lot better than the book.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Don. And that's kind of the same premise, Olivia, you were talking about with The Godfather. It takes, maybe it streamlined it from the book to the movie.
Yes, I think so. Although Dr. Zhivago might actually be longer than The Godfather. So, and having never read the book, Dr. Zhivago, I wonder how long that must be, actually. but yes, I think that's very similar.
Thanks a lot for that recommendation. We're talking about movies and TV shows that are better than the books they're based on. Olivia Rutigliano is with us, associate editor of the Crime Read section and senior film writer at Lit Hub. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there any movie or TV adaptations you think did a terrible job of representing the books they're based on, or ones that got it right, maybe even better than the book? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about movies and maybe TV shows that are better than the books they're based on. Olivia Rutigliano is with us, associate editor of the Crime Reads section and senior film writer at Lit Hub. You can join in with your suggestions or anti-suggestions at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Barbara is with us in Madison. Barbara, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What do you got for us?
Well, a book that I wouldn't consider a great book, but it was a very pleasurable read, was Where the Crawdads Sing by Della Owens. And I thought the movie version enhanced the book. I thought the two just were, should be one read and the other watched.
And what was it about the movie that you liked even better than the book?
It fleshed out some of the characters that the book kind of left a little bit more. I don't know what the word I'm thinking of is.
Sort of background characters, maybe.
Yeah.
Interesting. Barbara, thanks a lot for sharing that. That's interesting, Olivia, because in this case, you know, a couple we talked about, Godfather, Dr. Zhivago, our caller thought, hey, it took out some extraneous stuff. It streamlined it. Sometimes people are liking movies better because it fleshed out some of the stuff that was left unexplored in the book.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? I mean, do you think that's a common approach?
That's a very good question. I definitely think that sometimes when we read a book, we want more from it. A wise adaptation might give us a lot more to work with. I think one of those examples might actually be William Goldman's The Princess Bride, a book which is excellent, but a movie that knowingly expands certain elements while also maintaining pretty tight textual fidelity. I think sometimes one of the issues is knowing when to stop adding things. When we're turning books into miniseries, how many seasons should we play with? How many seasons should we add on if the first one is successful? Questions like that, I think, should govern these conversations. Sometimes less is more.
Thanks a lot for that call. I want to give a listen to another movie you wrote about. This is a clip from Tim Burton's 2003 film, Big Fish.
They say when you meet the love of your life, time stops. And that's true. What they don't tell you is that once time starts again, it moves extra fast to catch up.
Sounds like a Tim Burton film. It's based on the novel by Daniel Wallace. The novel, I guess, is a tribute and reaction to the Odyssey and James Joyce's Ulysses. What is it about that one that made the movie better than the book to you?
Well, Daniel Wallace's Big Fish is a great book. It's a novel about a man's relationship with his father, and it is wonderful. However, I saw the movie first, I will admit, and I was so enchanted by Tim Burton's particularly surreal realization of that. Tim Burton is suited really well, I think, to movies that have a hint of realism, but tip, you know, into fantasy or wild adventures, not too much. I don't want to be taken away to a fantasy world by Tim Burton entirely, but I want the real world to be injected with something magical by Tim Burton. And it's like a picaresque story. It's about this young man getting to know his father through a lifetime of his father's stories. So the flashbacks that take us to these many adventures as they're narrated by the character of the father, who is played by Albert Finney in the present day and who's played by Ewan McGregor in flashbacks, get to be visually full of the kind of possible exaggeration that, you know, all the really good storytellers we know inject into their stories. So the way that the film is handled visually and sonically pairs really well with the figure of a larger than life raconteur or narrator storyteller who regales us and who you wonder might not be telling the truth, but you don't care. So I thought the visual way Tim Burton was able to navigate that was really masterful. That's what made it special.
We've got some more recommendations from our listeners at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Jerry in West Bend. Jerry, hi.
Hi. I wanted to tell you, Rob and Olivia, that this is a wonderful idea for a program. I have been just a voracious reader for my lifetime. And one of the books I read was Papillon, The Butterfly. And I read it probably 20 or 30 years ago. And a few years later, I came across the book, and I was very disappointed.
Across the movie, you mean?
I came across the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. I went to see the movie because I had been so, I had enjoyed the book so much. And it turned out that what they did is, in the movie, they had the main character have events that happened to four or five different people in the book.
Oh.
All happened. Main character.
Jerry, thanks a lot for that story. Have you had that experience, Olivia, with, you know, that movie you're anticipating from a book you liked, and there was some kind of decision like that that just ruined it for you?
You know, one thing that I'm thinking about is actually the new Great Expectations series that aired on FX/Hulu. The Great Expectations is a novel I absolutely love, and I've reread many times over the years. I'm a big Dickens fan. And that adaptation was startling. It was startling how much was moved around, condensed, and straight up invented to the point where I didn't recognize it anymore.
Wow.
So I wouldn't say it's the exact same thing of having multiple characters condensed into one, but it did condense, let's say, 300 years worth of action adventure into the experiences of a single character who often doesn't deal with many of those things in the book. So I was a bit unmoored, let's say, by that decision.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Jerry. We're talking about book to movie or book to TV adaptations. Olivia Rutigliano is with us, and we're looking at the ones where the movie did it better or maybe the book did. Back to your calls with Susie in Williams Bay. Hi, Susie.
Yeah, I'm going to say To Kill a Mockingbird.
Are you saying movie better than book?
I think they're both great.
Oh, okay. That was the wonder. You liked the book and the movie didn't let you down.
Right. I haven't read the book since high school, and I have seen the movie lots of times on DVD, and I think they're both excellent.
Susie, thanks a lot for sharing that one. Olivia, she likes them both, though it's been a while on the book. Is that one a movie you want to weigh in on?
Yeah, I think those are actually frequently referenced in conversations, articles, where the book is just as good as the movie is just as good as the book. They're both masterpieces. And of course, you know, Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch is one of the most indelible figures in cinema history. An actor, Harper Lee, initially didn't want to play Atticus Finch because she thought he was too dashing, too handsome, and it took some convincing, allegedly. So sometimes even the author is a bit dubious about some of the ways that a text will be realized in real life. But I agree. I think the book and the film both are extraordinarily impressive and very effective in what they set out to do.
Thanks a lot for that call. Maurice joins us now in Madison. Maurice, hi.
How you doing? So
good.
My movie is On the Beach with Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner and Fred Astaire in a dramatic role. It's about the surviving people after a nuclear war, and the only people left are in Australia, and they're dying off, too. I didn't read the book, but my point is that it's like comparing apples and oranges, because it's a different experience. The emotion that was brought by those characters, I don't think the book could have done that. I remember the The author's name is Neville Shute.
Neville Shute, yeah.
And it's, I guess it's a good book. I'll have to read it, finally. Well,
Maurice, thanks a lot. I got you. Thanks a lot for the call. I've read the book. It was a great book. Mm-hmm. Really bummed me out. I didn't want to live through that experience again, honestly.
Yeah.
Olivia, you were nodding along. I think I heard on some of what Maurice had to say, though, on the apples and oranges there.
Yeah, I think they're extremely different. I think the book, well, it's a, so On the Beach is a post-apocalyptic movie from the late 50s. And I think in the novel, there's the war starts without any nation being at fault. I think it's more about the destruction of the world and the survivors as opposed to a specific global conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that differs than in the book. I think the book is more is. I'm sorry. I think it differs than in the movie. I think the movie is very much about the global politics that lead up to the war and the destruction of the world.
Interesting. Thanks a lot for that call. Olivia, I was just thinking you mentioned authors who don't like where the movie is going. I visited Anne Rice's grave in New Orleans earlier this year. She famously hated the idea of Tom Cruise playing her main character. And then took out a full-page Variety ad saying, I love Tom Cruise as my main character. Thoughts on that one as we wrap up?
Yes. I think that's one of the famous conversion stories of an author initially not liking the character and then going to like it. I mean, when you write a book and you see someone else realize it, you can have many different reactions. I think Emily St. John Mandel, the writer, has said that she believes other people might actually have better versions of her story than she does.
Wow.
But that's not necessarily shared by every author. And sometimes when you put your heart and soul into a book, you create a character who is, you know, so captivating. It's very hard to see someone you didn't initially envision in that position. I don't know. I know one of the great adaptations is Field of Dreams, which is not on the list and which is I forgot to include when we were doing our roundup. I didn't think of it and I should have. But W.P. Kinsella, the author of the book Shoeless Joe, on which Field of Dreams is based, actually based the character of Ray Kinsella on himself. I mean, how does an adaptation process work when someone's doing it when the character is based on you?
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Olivia Rutigliano. We've been talking about films and TV shows adapted from books. Food Friday is up next with Fruit. This is Central Time.